le micro marche. Pour faire, je vais commencer en français, mais je crois que je changerai en anglais après quelques minutes, parce que pour faire toute la conférence en français, j'ai besoin de plusieurs jours d'entraînement à chaque visite. J'oublie beaucoup entre les passages en France, et donc je me sens incapable de faire la conférence en français. C'est dommage. Mais je puis décrire le logiciel libre, la question du logiciel libre en français en trois mots. Liberté, égalité, fraternité. Liberté parce que l'utilisateur est libre d'utiliser le programme pour soi-même et en coopération avec les autres. Égalité parce que tous les utilisateurs possèdent les mêmes droits. Et fraternité parce que nous encourageons la coopération entre les utilisateurs. Où les développeurs du logiciel propriétaire interdisent la coopération. Et c'est ça la question éthique de base dans le champ de logiciels libres. Est-ce que la coopération sera encouragée ou interdite? So I think I will switch to English now. I am very tired, as well as not really well. When we say something, a program is free software, we are referring to four specific freedoms. There is freedom zero, the freedom to run the program for any legitimate purpose in any way. There is freedom one, the freedom to help yourself by studying the source code so you know what the program does. Ce n'est pas un vrai oiseau. C'est dommage. In India, at the World Social Forum, I tested the microphone with some bird sounds, and then it turns out that there were actually some birds coming to the speech. And one flew repeatedly back and forth, while another was singing very loud from somewhere near the room. So I tried responding. I didn't know birds were really interested in using software, but why not? So, freedom one is the freedom to study the source code of the program so you can tell what the program really does and then change it to do what you want. Freedom two is the freedom to help your neighbor by distributing copies to others. And freedom three is the freedom to help build your community by publishing an improved version so others can get the benefit of your contribution. If you have all of these freedoms, the program is free software for you. All of these freedoms are necessary. Please do not think of them as levels of freedom. If you have only some of these freedoms, that's not good enough. You shouldn't use that program at all. We have to maintain a minimum standard of freedom and say, if the program doesn't come up to this minimum standard, we reject it. Why is this necessary? Because otherwise, somebody will say, this program is very attractive and it's a little below the standard, but accept it anyway. And if we do that, someone else will say, well, my program is just a little bit lower and it's very attractive, isn't it? So accept it anyway. And then someone else will provide a program a little bit lower, and so on. And you know, a sequence of small steps can take you any distance. So if we're going to maintain any particular kind of freedom, we must draw a line and say, if a program does not give us this level of freedom, we won't accept it. And that's the idea of the definition of free software. That is the line. That's the statement. These are the minimal freedoms that people must have. There are multiple ways to do this. There are many different free software licenses that provide the four freedoms, but they all provide the four freedoms. That's why we say they are free software licenses. But they provide the four freedoms in slightly different ways, or very different ways. The point is that they all reach the minimum threshold, and so those licenses are all acceptable. So why these four freedoms? How did I come to the conclusion that these are the four freedoms to insist on? Because these are the freedoms that we need to use the program as part of a community where we can cooperate. Freedom two, the freedom to help your neighbor, is necessary for a very special reason. Because that's the freedom to live an ethical life, to be a good person. See, if you use a program that doesn't give you freedom too, then you're facing a potential moral dilemma. At any time, a friend of yours could come up and say, "That's a nice program. Could I have a copy?" And then what are you going to do? Then the moral dilemma is real, because you have to choose between two alternatives that are bad. One alternative is make the copy anyway and violate the license. And the other alternative is comply with the license but fail to cooperate with your friend. You have to choose the lesser of the two evils. The lesser of the two evils, in my opinion, is to cooperate with your friend and let the license go hang. You see, if you're forced to be unhelpful to someone or to do some kind of wrong to someone, it should be choose the person who deserves it. Whoever tried to stop you from sharing with your friend deserves to be punished. Whereas your friend, why should we presume your friend deserves any mistreatment? So that's the lesser of the two evils. You can choose the lesser of the two evils. But once you have thought about this, once you're aware that using the non-free program means that you may find yourself in this moral dilemma, what you should really do is avoid the situation. Don't use that program. If you don't use the non-free program, you won't be forced to choose between two evils. You'll be able to be completely good. So that's the choice that I make. If someone offers me a program, but I have to sign a promise I won't share it with you, I say no. In fact, I say a lot more than just no. Once I was in the audience when John Perry Barlow was giving a speech, and he asked people, "Raise your hand if you have no unauthorized copies of software." And when he saw somebody in the audience had raised his hand, he said, "Oh, you, Richard, of course. You see, all my copies of software are free software, so they're all authorized." So this is the reason why we have to insist on freedom too. Freedom too is the freedom to be a good neighbor. Freedom too is the freedom to to cooperate with other people in society. And we must make sure this freedom is present in society, because the most important resource of any society is the spirit of goodwill, the willingness to help others. This is not a physical resource like air and water. It's a psychosocial resource, but that doesn't make it any less important. This resource makes the difference between a livable society and a dog-eat-dog jungle. It's no accident that the world's major religions have been promoting this spirit of goodwill for millennia. So, what does it mean when powerful social institutions say that it's wrong to share? They're poisoning this spirit of goodwill, something that no society can afford. No society has quite enough of this spirit. It makes a difference if we encourage it or discourage it. And what does it mean when they say, if you share with your neighbor, you're a pirate? They're saying that helping your neighbor is the moral equivalent of attacking a ship, which I think is morality upside down. Attacking a ship is very, very bad. Helping your neighbor is good. And what does it mean when they make harsh punishments, as France has done or may be about to do, for people who share with their neighbor? How much fear do you think it's going to take before people are too scared to help each other anymore? And do you want to live in a society filled with that level of fear? The proprietary software developers are carrying out something we can only call a terror campaign. In two different countries, Argentina and Germany, they have threatened people with being raped in prison for using unauthorized copies of software. Threatening people with rape can only be described as a terror campaign. I think we should put an end to their terror campaign. We should not tolerate it to go on in our society. They're predators, and it's time to put an end to their depredations. That's the reason for freedom too, the freedom to help your neighbor by distributing copies to others. The other three freedoms are necessary so that you can be free to control your own computer. Freedom zero is obviously necessary. If you are restricted in how you can run the program, then you're not free to operate your own computer. But freedom zero is not enough, because freedom zero only enables you to use the program the way it's written, to do exactly what it will do when you run it. And that's not really control. In fact, you can't even tell if you don't have freedom one, the freedom to study the source code and then change it to do what you want. You can't even tell what the program's really doing. It's quite common for non-free programs to have malicious features. Features put in to be good for the developer and bad for you. The most basic kind of malicious feature is spyware. Spyware is very common. For instance, Windows XP is spyware. If you search for a string in your files, it sends a message to a server, apparently saying what string you searched for. And when it asks for an upgrade, it sends a report of what software you've installed on your disk. Microsoft first put that in several years ago, but there was an uproar, so they took it out. And then they reintroduced it secretly. The information is sent encrypted. So it was hard to tell that Windows was actually sending it. But about a year ago, some people did some research and reported this. However, spyware is not limited to Windows. Windows Media Player does the same thing. It reports whatever you look at, whatever you listen to. But lest you think that Microsoft alone is so nasty that they would do this, I should point out that RealPlayer does the same thing. And the TiVo does the same thing. Spyware is quite common. But spyware is just the beginning. Another thing that many non-free programs do is they actually refuse to function some of the time. This is called DRM, Digital Restrictions Management. They just refuse to open certain documents, refuse to display the files, or if they'll display the files, they won't let you do other things, like copy some words into another file. They go even further. Some non-free programs reconfigure your computer. For instance, they may make it display ads subsequently. They figure you won't know this, and you won't know how to fix it afterward. They get bizarre. The non-free music sharing program, Kazaa, makes arrangements so that the developers can sell time on your computer. The client pays to run his program on your computer, but he doesn't pay you. He pays the developer. When this was discovered and pointed out to them, they said, oh yes, look at our license. It says we can do essentially anything we want. So the users have already agreed to this without knowing that this is what they agreed to. And it can go as far as actual backdoors. For instance, Windows XP has a backdoor. When it asks for an upgrade, Microsoft knows who you are. They can give you a special upgrade just for you. Windows might have other backdoors as well that Microsoft doesn't know about, because the fact that the source code is secret means it's hard for anyone to find the backdoors. Sure, theoretically, some Microsoft developers, some developers in Microsoft can look, but they're busy. There's no telling how long a backdoor might survive with put in by a few people surreptitiously without being noticed by anyone else in Microsoft. I'm told that some developers working on Windows XP were arrested and accused of working for Al-Qaeda, of trying to put in a backdoor. Well, that particular attempt didn't succeed. Perhaps there was another that did. So you can't really trust what the program is doing. However, there are developers of non-free software who are at least honest, who do try to make the program do what is useful for the clients. Even then, they're still human, so they make mistakes. These mistakes are called bugs. Every program has bugs, and you're going to be stuck with them. We free software developers are also human. We also make mistakes. Our programs also have bugs. But because you have Freedom 1, the freedom to study the source code and change it to do what you want, you're not stuck with our bugs. Yes, we make mistakes, but you can find them and you can fix them. You can make the program do what you want it to do. You can make little changes. You can make big changes. So you are in charge of what your computer does. But But freedom one is not enough. First of all, because there are millions of users who don't know how to program. They can't personally read the source code and change it to do what they want. But even for programmers like many of you, freedom one is not enough. Because there's just so much software. There's so much free software. None of us has the time to master all those programs so we can quickly make the changes that we want. And none of us has the time to make all the changes we want. The only way we can effectively take control of our computers is if we can do it together. In other words, we must have liberty, we must have fraternity. Interesting. The only way any of us can control our computers is if we work together to do it. Here's how it works. Freedom 3 is the freedom to publish a modified version, the freedom to make the changes you want and then publish it so others can use those changes too. So imagine that there are, among the users, there are a million people who are wishing for a certain change. Just by luck, some tens of thousands of them probably know how to program. So sooner or later, 10 of them will get together and make the change. And then they can publish their modified version. So then they can publish their modified version and all million of those users will use it. So all of those people who don't know how to program got the change they wanted because sooner or later somebody did it. And then suppose that they also want another change. Well, somebody else will make the other change and publish another modified version and they'll all get that too. Which shows how any part of the community can take control and develop the program in the direction it wants. And thus, we find that the software is truly under the control of its users. The users are free to control what their computers do. What happens if you have a smaller number of users who want a certain change? Suppose 20, and none of them knows how to program. Well, they can still get together, and they can each put in a certain amount of money, and together they can pay a programmer to make the change. They have to want it badly enough to pay. But if they do, they can do this. And at this point, they discover that they have a choice of who to hire. They can go to one programming company and say, "How much will you charge to make this change? When can you have it done?" And if they don't like that answer, they can go to another company and ask the same questions. They have a free market for support. Free software means there is a free market for support. This is noteworthy because proprietary software means that there is a monopoly of support because only the developer has the source code. Only the developer can make changes for you. So you're dealing with a monopoly, and that means they don't care. That's why the support for proprietary software is usually lousy. Sometimes they'll say, "Pay us and you can report a bug." And if you do that, they'll say, "In 6 months there will be an upgrade. Buy the upgrade and you'll see if we fixed this bug. And you'll see what new bugs we have for you." So this is interesting because if you have a choice between several non-free programs to do a certain job, this might look like it's not a monopoly. But once you choose, support's going to be a monopoly. Support for this program is a monopoly. Support for this program is a different monopoly. Support for this program is a different monopoly. So you have a choice between monopolies. In effect, you can choose who will be your master. But choosing your master is not freedom. It's not enough to have a choice of programs to use. That's not the issue at all. The question is to have a program you can use in freedom. And if you are offered 20 different proprietary programs to do the job, none of them respects your freedom. That's 20 different ways to be in bondage. And you should say no to every one of them. So these are the reasons why the four freedoms are necessary. In deciding detailed questions, where exactly to draw the line, I've always looked at the practices of using software in our community and I've asked myself, practically speaking, with this license requirement, will it be possible for our community to utilize the program fully? For instance, it must be possible to include, to distribute binaries of a modified version of the program. Binary distributions are important in our community, and if the program can't be modified and used in a binary distribution, we have to reject it. Commercial distribution must be permitted because commercial distribution is very important in our community, and any program that's excluded from that can't really be part of a free operating system. I decided to develop a free operating system for a very specific practical reason. You must have an operating system to run your computer. You can't do anything without the operating system. And by operating system, I mean a sufficient collection of programs that you can develop and debug and run other programs, exchange mail, and edit and print publications. An operating system does a lot of things. It doesn't just provide a base to run other programs on. In 1983, all the operating systems for modern computers were proprietary. If you wanted to buy a computer and use it, the first thing you had to do was betray all your fellow human beings by signing a non-disclosure agreement just to get the binaries of the operating system. They wouldn't give you the source code. And thus, it was impossible to use a computer ethically. I wanted to change that situation, so I set out to develop a free software operating system. Once we had a free software operating system, it would be possible to use a computer ethically. And the system that I set out to develop, that I announced in 1983, is called GNU. The name is simply for humor purposes. GNU stands for GNU's Not Unix. It's a recursive acronym, and programmers always like jokes about recursion. Also, the word GNU in English is used for lots of jokes, because according to the dictionary, it's pronounced new. So people started asking each other, hey, what's GNU? There's even a funny song based on the word GNU. So I couldn't resist using that name. It was just too funny. (Clears throat) when it's the name of our operating system, please do not follow the dictionary. If you talk about the new operating system, you'll get people confused. We've been working on it for 20 years now, so it's not new anymore. But it still is and always will be GNU, no matter how many people call it Linux by mistake. And that's very common, actually, because in 1991, the GNU system was mostly finished. It's a Unix-like operating system, which means it's made of lots of pieces. In 1991, we had most of the pieces. Many of them we had written for the GNU project. Many others we had found somewhere. And putting them all together, you had almost everything necessary, but there was one important missing piece, and that was the kernel, the program that allocates the computer's resources to the other programs that you run. We started developing our kernel in 1990. It runs now, but it's still not really ready for general use. But in 1991, while we were still in the early stages, somebody else wrote a kernel. And in 1992, he made it free software, at which point it was being referred to as Linux. The availability of Linux, the kernel, made it possible to fill the last gap in the GNU system, to produce a complete system, which was mostly GNU, but not exactly, because it had a different kernel. It was GNU and Linux combined. And with this combination, the goal we set out for in 1984 was achieved. It became possible for the first time since the microcomputer days, to get a computer and run it without betraying other people, to get a computer and run it in freedom. But a confusion developed at that time. People started calling the entire system Linux, and then many people started thinking that GNU was just the name of a tool chain, which by coincidence turned out to be useful in making Linux. Take a look at the documents. There's no coincidence about this. The goal of a free operating system is what I announced in 1983. And every step of the way, we were working towards producing that complete operating system. So complete that it even included games. The Unix system included games, so GNU should include games. GNU Chess is very highly regarded. Far too powerful for me. I would never think of trying to play chess with GNU Chess. It would probably beat me in 9 moves or something. So, I hope that you will recognize our vision of freedom. If you call the system GNU/Linux or GNU plus Linux, you'll give us a share of the credit. It was, after all, the GNU project that did the biggest part of the work, so I think we are entitled to equal mention, but usually we don't get any. It makes a difference because when people think the system is Linux, they often follow the political vision of Linus Torvalds. The political vision of Linus Torvalds is it's just technology, make the decisions on technical basis, please don't bother me with these political questions. He's not interested in fighting for freedom to control your computer or freedom to help your neighbor. But the GNU project is based on those ideas. If the users know that the system they are using exists because of a campaign for freedom, maybe they'll think about freedom. Maybe they'll think about the political questions of what rights they should have in the age of use of computers. And maybe they will work together with us to defend our freedom, maybe freedom will endure. But if they don't think about it, they won't defend it. People who don't value their freedom will lose it, because there's always somebody looking for a chance to take it away. And if you don't think it's worth anything, you'll let him. A fool and his freedom are soon parted. So if we want to keep our freedom, we've got to teach other people that it's their freedom too. We have to teach them to value freedom, to appreciate it, so that they can join with us to defend it. And then we may have a chance to preserve it. Freedom is under attack all around the world nowadays. One after another, governments have chosen terrorism as the convenient excuse to attack the freedom of their country. It's very rare that anyone has the courage to say, freedom is too important, don't take away our freedom. But we have to start saying this more. What are the threats to our freedom today? One threat is when people add non-free programs to the system. Today, I spoke with somebody who thought he had contributed a program to our community. He wrote a program and released it under the GNU GPL. And then I said, will it run on GNU/Linux? And he said, it's written in Java, so it will run anywhere. And then I said, will it run on a free Java implementation with free Java libraries? And he had no idea, because he had never tried. He had only been using the non-free Java implementation from Sun. But people who live in freedom can't use Sun's Java implementation. It's not free software. What is it about Java that induces blindness like this? People get somehow get lulled into believing if I write in Java, it's okay. And they ignore the fact that they are making a program that cannot run unless some other non-free software is there in the system. If you want to write in Java, if you want to write in C, if you want to write in any language, make sure your program can be compiled and run with free tools and free libraries. Check the libraries you're using. Make sure they are free too. Otherwise, you haven't succeeded in contributing to our community. Please warn other people. Don't assume that using Java means you're okay. Develop with a free Java platform, like the GNU Java compiler and GNU ClassPath, and then you're okay. If you use the features that are present in free implementations of Java, then it's okay, just the same way C is okay. But you've got to check the dependencies of your program. This is one danger, but it's not the biggest danger. Another danger comes from non-free drivers. There is hardware whose specifications are secret. They'll sell you the hardware, but they won't tell you how to use it. Isn't that strange? Instead, they offer you a binary-only, non-free driver. And they say, we support Linux, but they're misunderstanding support as well as misunderstanding Linux. Because they don't really support the GNU/Linux system. You can't use their hardware with a free system. We need to educate the community to say no to those drivers and say no to the hardware that uses them. We need to push for hardware that we can use in freedom, and we need to teach other people to use it. Another bigger problem comes from laws that prohibit our work. The United States has two different laws prohibiting our work. Not all the time, of course. These laws don't say free software is illegal, but they prohibit free software for certain jobs or of certain kinds. One law is the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, which prohibits free software for a certain range of jobs, such as playing a DVD. There is free software to play a DVD. It was developed by some people in Europe, and it was available for a while in the U.S., but now it's censored. It has been forbidden in the U.S., and I'm afraid it's going to be forbidden in Europe also because of a cruel and unjustified, totally reprehensible directive on copyright adopted a few years ago. My computer came with a DVD player. I've never been able to use it. If you buy a DVD, it's lawful for you to play the DVD. But the free software that you could use to play it on your GNU/Linux system is illegal in the U.S. Now, this is a rather specific application, but I'm afraid many users may want to do it. And if they can't do it on a free system, maybe they won't switch to a free system. That's what I'm worried about. The other law in the U.S. that prohibits our work is patent law. In the U.S., software ideas can be patented. This does not mean patenting programs. That would be completely different. Instead, patenting an idea means that nobody's allowed to write a program which implements that idea. So look at your word processor. You'll see hundreds of features. Each of those features is at least one idea. Maybe it's several ideas put together. So each of those features could be patented in at least one way. Probably only some of them are patented. So now imagine that you're trying to write a word processor. How can you possibly do it? The only way is close your eyes and hope. At each design decision, you might or might not step on a patent that will explode and destroy your project. There's, practically speaking, no way to tell. Close your eyes and hope. The European Union is right now in the middle of deciding whether to allow software patents. In fact, today, I believe, there is an event in Brussels. The European Parliament voted against software patents. We're afraid that the Council of Ministers, which typically involves the ministers under which the patent office falls in each country, will support software patents. So we're trying to recruit support now in the European Parliament to tell the Council of Ministers, don't send us a directive like that. Right now, Europeans have a great advantage over Americans. Americans can be the victims of software patent lawsuits. Europeans probably can't. The European Patent Office has been issuing many software patents, but since the treaty under which they are issued, under which the European Patent Office exists, says there shouldn't be software patents, generally nobody dares to go into court with any of them. So European software developers have an advantage right now. They could go to the U.S. Patent Office and apply for U.S. patents if they want, and then they can go kick us Americans around at home. But Americans can't come to Europe and get valid software patents and attack you at home. As long as Europe rejects software patents, Europeans will have an advantage until someday the U.S. wises up and realizes that this policy is a disaster. So please do everything you can to fight against software patents in Europe. Then there's another danger, which is not of legal form. A number of large companies have a conspiracy to change the design of computers in the future. Their plan is to redesign computers so that application developers get control and you don't. They call this plan trusted computing. But what that means is the application developer can trust your computer to obey him and disobey you. So from your perspective, that name is a lie. I call it treacherous computing, computation déloyale. How do I know about this conspiracy? It's not a secret. They have a website where you can see that many large companies such as Intel and AMD and IBM and Microsoft and HP are participating in this conspiracy. The idea of the conspiracy is that one program will be able to store data in such a way that you can't write a program to access it. You can't independently, without permission, succeed in writing a program that will access that data. Imagine if this catches on. Microsoft is trying every conceivable method to stop us from reading Word files. The first method they tried was just to make the format a secret, so people had to figure it out. Well, they figured out a lot of it, maybe not all. So nowadays, free word processors can pretty much read Word files. But this may not continue. The next step Microsoft tried was to use a patented technique. The patented idea, apparently, is totally trivial. They have something at the beginning and the end of the file that looks like XML. And inside the XML is a binary data string. And this apparently is patented. And they say, we're using XML now. It's like a dragon that says, my teeth aren't sharp. Well, this one isn't. But the next thing they're going to try probably is treacherous computing. Imagine if 5 years from now, treacherous computing is normally present in computers. Microsoft could make Word use treacherous computing to lock up your Word files. If you're foolish enough to have any Word files. And then it'll be not just difficult, not just possibly illegal to make another word processor read Word files, it'll be impossible. So we face very big threats. And at the same time, we are handicapped by a weakness. The weakness is that many of the people in our community don't recognize the issues of freedom that are at stake here. Often they think that free software is nothing but a convenient alternative that you might use when it's better. People who think like that won't fight for their freedom. And before they know it, their freedom will be gone. They, since about 6 years ago, have a separate movement of their own. They often don't speak of free software. They will speak of open source. The open source movement was started in 1998 by people who disagree with the ethical ideals of free software. By people who wanted a way they could talk about the software without ever raising the idea that this was a matter of freedom that we're entitled to. They wanted that idea to slip away into the background and be forgotten. And to a large extent, they succeeded. So it's up to us to teach other people about these ideas of freedom, the ideas that they won't talk about. You know, they won't teach the public. We have to teach the public to value freedom. And I think that's the most important job to be done these days. Yes, it's important to develop more free software, but we have a lot more people developing free software than we have teaching people about freedom. There we have very few. There are many people who suggest we should follow a two-part plan. First, introduce people to free software. Show them that it's good to use. And second, teach them about freedom. This two-part plan might be good, but it's not being carried out properly because there are lots of people working on step one, and hardly anybody is working on step two. So if you think this two-part plan is a good idea, join me working on step two. Right now, the buffer in between step one and step two is getting very, very full. There are tens of millions of users who think the system, the GNU/Linux system, is good to use and have not yet been taught to think about freedom. So that's what I focus on. I never try to, well, in conversations with an individual, sure, I'll encourage that person to try GNU/Linux. But I don't focus my effort on that because so many other people are doing it. I'll leave it to them. I try to focus on the job that most people are not doing, which is teaching other people about freedom. And I urge some of you to join. I urge all of you. If all of you do this, it won't be too many. I urge you to join me in focusing on spreading awareness of the issues of freedom to control your computer and freedom to cooperate. So, at this point, I guess I will ask for questions. No, before I do that, I should do a couple of other things and then ask for questions to wrap up. First of all, there are GNU stickers available. I don't have them here. They're downstairs somewhere. I've got some buttons. They say, ask me about free software. It's all about freedom. So if anyone wants to buy a button, €1 would be nice. For the Free Software Foundation, not for me. And I also have these FSF pins with a GNU head. So if you want one, come talk to me. And now to close, I will introduce my alter ego. People sometimes accuse me of having a holier-than-thou attitude. I don't think that's true. In general, I don't condemn people just because they're not as firm in standing up for freedom as I am. I just invite them to do more. But I am holy because I'm a saint. It's my job to be holy. I am Saint Ignatius of the Church of Emacs. I bless your computer, my child. Emacs started out as a text editor, but became a way of life for many users, and ultimately a religion. We even have a great schism between two rival versions of Emacs. And today we have saints, fortunately no gods. To be a member of the Church of Emacs, you must recite the Confession of the Faith. You must say, there is no system but GNU, and Linux is one of its kernels. The Church of Emacs has, if this is for the press, please don't use this. It'll give people completely the wrong idea if this is the first thing they see. If I do this after an hour of a serious speech, people will understand I'm just making fun of myself. But if they see this before they read the words, they'll think I'm just a clown. I'm a clown, but I'm a serious clown. And I want them to see the serious point. So I implore you, please don't use this for the publication. So the Church of Emacs has advantages compared with some other churches. To be a saint in the Church of Emacs does not require celibacy. So if you're looking for a church to be holy, and you might consider ours. However, it does require living a life of moral purity. You must exorcise the evil proprietary operating systems that possess all the computers under your direct practical control, and install a wholly free operating system, and then only install free software on top of that. If you make a vow to do this and then you live by this, then you too will be a saint, and you too may eventually have a halo, if you can find one, because they don't make them anymore. Sometimes people ask me if it is a sin in the Church of Emacs to use the editor VI. The answer is that using a free version of VI is not a sin, it's a penance. And sometimes people ask me if my halo is really an old computer disk. This is no computer disk. This is my halo. But it was a computer disk in a previous existence. So at this point, I'll accept questions. Please speak very slow and loud in whichever language. Je suis dur d'oreille.
The problem of giving some prayer.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Here, you can?
Now I can hear you, but okay. Please try to pronounce very carefully.
I will try. So, you talk about giving softwares to friends.
And wedding software to friends?
Mm, giving.
Giving.
Sending.
Oh, to friends, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, and in France, the law allows us to do it without a license. So
I think that's been changed.
Maybe. But the problem, one thing I don't understand with license is that the GNU GPL license, or one of them, they are in English, so they are not, there is no value in France.
Well, I don't think that's true. No one could demand that publications in the U.S. state their licenses in French in order for them to be valid in France. French lawyers have looked at the question and they believe the GNU GPL is valid in France.
Okay.
Hello. I'm working in software company and you didn't talk about business.
That's right, because I didn't talk about business because it's a secondary issue. You know, the most important area of life is what's right and what's wrong. What freedom should everyone have? And then once we've decided that, go ahead and look for ways to do business. As long as you respect other people's freedom, I'm not going to criticize you for doing business. But don't come to me and say that you want to have the power to crush other people's freedom because then your business can be more profitable. I really don't care whether you succeed in business. I don't care either way. It's part of the idea of a free enterprise system that people are free to try to do business, and a lot of them are going to fail, and that's okay. It's not a tragedy when a business fails, and if it turns out a certain kind of business can't be done successfully respecting other people's rights, tough. Bayer Crop Science just decided not to grow genetically modified corn in Britain. They had been given permission, but the conditions said, if your genes pollute any other farmers' fields, you're going to be liable. And they said, under these conditions, we can't make any money. We won't even try. Well, goodbye. So there are ways to do business in the free software world. One of them I've already mentioned. It's making changes on commission. And this is actually done by lots of people in France. There are people whose business is, we'll install, adapt, and extend free software to do your job for you. This is a completely legitimate line of business. I used to do it myself. I don't do it anymore, but that's because of my work for the past many years is not programming. It's a perfectly good thing to do.
I think the way to reach a holy world is long, but...
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
Yeah, the path to reach holiness in all the world is long, I think. But we made a long, good progress this last years, maybe. So I would like to have your vision on the path we have been made, the steps we have been made, and where are we from your vision on that way?
We have made a great beginning. We now have complete free operating systems, more than one, and we have many free applications. But we don't have all the applications we need. And the systems could use improvement in some ways. We now have good free graphical interfaces. This is very important because it means that ordinary people who are not wizards can begin using free software exclusively. And this is already happening. We know that our system is good enough for ordinary users. But we need a lot more applications to be developed before the day when we can say, whatever you want to do, please don't think of giving up your freedom to do it. And we have tens of millions of users, but there are hundreds of millions of people using non-free operating systems. And even of those tens of millions, many of them use some non-free software on top of the GNU/Linux system. So we've made a great beginning, but we have a long way to go. before, every computer user is free. Here are some questions that have been written down. What do I think about Apple? Well, Apple contributes to a certain extent to developing free software, but also develops a lot of non-free software. Did Bill Gates bite my arm? I've never met Bill Gates. What do I think about the GNOME or Mozilla foundations? I think the GNOME Foundation ought to do more to follow the principles of the GNU project. GNOME is a part of the GNU project. It was founded specifically to fight against the danger that people would use a free desktop that depended on a non-free library. That library is not a problem anymore because today it's free software. But back then in 1997, when we started developing GNOME, the Qt library was not free software. But it was an attractive danger. Free software developers were thinking, it's available conveniently, I might as well use it. Today they're doing the exact same thing with Java. Other questions?
Yeah, thank you. If you don't mind, I would like to come back to the business aspect through an example. A friend of mine has his own small company. He's developing software, and he's been developing a software for 10 years, which now sells quite well.
Of course, I'm very sad to hear it. This is unethical.
Sorry?
I am very sad to hear it, because this is unethical.
Well, he lives out of it. This is his
what?
Source. This is his only source.
I don't care if he makes money from it. He's inviting other people to give up their freedom. This shouldn't be happening. I can't understand it. I mean, imagine a person saying, "Yes, I go around on the street and I hit people on the head, but this is my sole source of income." How can you criticize me for doing this if it makes money?
No, I mean,
yes, I know that I'm poisoning the river, but this is my sole source of income.
But I mean, this person hasn't been working for free for these 10 years.
I don't care. He shouldn't have done it. He should have done something else.
Okay.
I'm not saying that. You seem to be arguing that he couldn't have written this program and made it free software. Perhaps that's true. Let's assume that's true. Then the question is, what should he have done? Mm-hmm. I think he should have done nothing. Or that is, he should have got some other job, done something else. If I had a choice between developing a non-free program or no program at all, I will develop no program at all, because no program at all is not going to threaten your freedom. No program at all is not bait for a trap. It's not going to encourage people to promise not to share with you. Mm-hmm. But if I had developed a non-free program, it would encourage other people to promise not to share with you. So I would be hurting you. I would have hurt you already by developing that non-free program. This is precisely the reason why I developed the GNU operating system. This reasoning came first.
But I guess at that time you had other sources of income.
I don't understand you. What did you say?
When you spend your time to develop a free software...
No, that's not true.
You need to have other sources
of
income.
I quit my job to start this project. And I had to quit my job. I worked for MIT. And if I had continued working for MIT, the MIT administration could have claimed my work and turned it into a proprietary software product. I did not want to take the risk of that, so I quit my job. I had no idea how I would make a living, but I found ways.
How?
Well, for a lot of 1985, I was selling copies of GNU Emacs on tape. It was free software. C'était du logiciel libre, pas forcément gratuit. Je pouvais vendre des copies et tout le monde pouvait vendre des copies. C'est légitime pour tout le monde.
Thank you.
Then I did consulting. People paid me to add things to free software I had done and to teach classes. So there are several ways to do free software business. And you can also just get a job in some other field. I didn't know how I would make a living. I only knew that I would not make a living developing non-free software or risking developing non-free software.
Yeah, there is code below the free operating system, namely burnt into the PROM that's loading it, and sometimes inside the processor. So how can you absolutely trust the free software if you don't have access to the hardware code below
it? This is becoming a real issue. In the past, it was not much of a problem. There just wasn't much that code could do because it had to be so small. But today, we're getting to a point where there may really be a danger of something treacherous put into the boot PROM. How do you know? I don't know the solution for that.
Do you think there should be one day a free processor and a free PROM that you could plug into your
motherboard?
Well,
the problem
is
there can't really be a free processor. A processor is a physical object, and it can't be free in this sense. Nobody can copy a processor. And you can't modify a processor. You would destroy it. There could be a free processor design, but we can't afford a chip fabrication line, you and I. So we'd always be dependent on somebody with a chip fabrication line. This is a problem I don't know the solution to. What time is it? I'll continue answering questions for a little while more.
Hi, Richard. I want to know more about the kernel that are on developing by new project. Is heard the name or? Sorry.
The kernel that we started developing in 1990 is called the GNU Herd. Herd means troupeau, because GNUs in Africa live in herds. So we thought that this name, Herd, was a good name for the architecture of our kernel. It's not monolithic. It's a collection of servers that run on top of a microkernel. We used the existing Mach microkernel, and our task was to write the servers to run on top of Mach. Now people have concluded that they need to replace Mach with another microkernel, and they're working on switching over to L4, which is another microkernel also not developed by us. The Herd does run. Now, some months ago, there was a feature that was still being merged in, which was changes to handle large disk partitions. Back in 1990, people thought, we don't have to worry about disk partitions that are more than a few gig. So they mapped the whole disk partition into virtual memory, which puts a limit for 32-bit machines on the size of disk partition you can handle. So disks have got a lot bigger, so people have decided to... Someone wrote that code, and by now maybe it's merged in. This is an instance that the Herd runs, but there are a few features that you might want, or might not, which are missing. So if you don't need the missing features, you could use it now. This feature may no longer be missing. I'm not sure.
En français, Richard, excusez-moi.
D'accord, mais lentement.
Bien. Que pensez-vous du fait que, par exemple, la GPL soit maintenant utilisée par des musiciens, des poètes, des artistes? Quel avenir voyez-vous à la GPL? Est-ce que vous aviez envisagé cette possibilité?
Je n'ai pas envisagé, mais ça me paraît très bien. Are Mandrake and Red Hat just opportunists, or do you trust them? Neither one. It's somewhere in between. I'm concerned that these commercial distros contain non-free software. I hope that someday they will start distributing CDs of an entirely free operating system. However, they also do contribute a lot of real improvements to free software.
Hi. What would you say to our students who are going to the training periods in software companies that write proprietary codes and maybe give them some employment? Would you recommend
I'm sorry,
them?
What would I say to who?
To the students. Most of them are going to work this summer for software companies. Would you recommend to cancel
Actually,
them?
That most software development work is for custom software, not proprietary software. If developing a program for use by one particular client organization is legitimate. So I would say avoid developing non-free software to be released to the public.
Okay, because here at the ACO, at the University of Nice, we support your vision, but it's quite difficult to talk to the students. It's very good that you've done it today, because most of the time they think we are just dreaming. And we are kind of poets, because some months later they will work for a company that will sell software, proprietary software, and so on.
Yeah, don't use the term sell software. That's ambiguous.
Okay.
So if you want to be clear, don't use the term sell software. I sold copies of GNU Emacs in 1985. It was free software. I was selling free software. There's nothing contradictory in that, but it sounds contradictory.
The problem was, you said, don't do that job if you are writing software that will be proprietary.
Yeah, don't do that. Yeah. Do some other job.
But most of the students now, they are going to have a job in that field.
I think that's unlikely, because as I said, most software development is developing software for specific clients to use.
Dear Holy Richard, what else on earth should be free?
Je n'entends rien.
En français,
Plus fort.
Oh, Saint Richard, dear Holy Richard, in your mind, what else on earth should be free? You talk about software, but if you dream, what
else? These same issues apply and arguments apply to other works whose social purpose is to be used to do a job, such as manuals and textbooks and dictionaries and encyclopedias. And people are already working very strongly on the development of a free encyclopedia and, in some cases, free dictionaries as well, and on free teaching materials.
Good afternoon, Richard. There are some companies here in Sofia Antipolis who are writing code and drivers for their hardware they are selling. Some of them are free, some of them are not. Would you have some arguments to give us to these companies?
I don't know any recipe for how to convince a company to cooperate with our community, but I know the first step. The first step is to make it clear that a non-free driver is not cooperating with the world of free software. To say that's not good enough, we will not consider your device to work. We will have to urge people not to use it.
Hello. Very down-to-earth question for you. What hardware do you use and what software?
I'd rather not say what hardware other than that it's a PC, but I'm running Debian GNU/Linux.
To come back to the point of view, the way of music, in your opinion, the freedom is to be able to copy, to share data. And do you mind? It's possible to share music?
I think music sharing is legitimate and it should be legal. I don't think that the issue of music is the same as the issue of software. Software is a functional work. You use it to do a job. And if you can't change it to do your job, then you can't do the job the way you want. So you have to be free to change the software. And you have to be free to publish the modified version of the software because that enables people to work together to do their job. I don't think those issues apply to music. Music is not a functional work. But the ethical issue of freedom to share with other people does apply to music. So I would say for music, people should at least be free to non-commercially redistribute copies.
Hi. Today's does do you hear me? Today's does American software company use patents to stop some projects, some products using the software patents in US?
Yes, it has happened.
Do you have an example?
One example is the free MP3 encoders have been wiped out, driven underground in the US. And I've heard of other examples too, but I don't remember them at the moment. Microsoft is getting a lot of patents, and we are sure they're going to try to use them to wipe out free software.
What do you think about open hardware?
I'm not sure what it means.
What do you think about open hardware?
I don't work on open. I work on free software. Open is not my slogan. No, I think that free hardware designs are a useful thing. But because the situation with hardware is very different from the situation with software, it's not clear to me that free hardware designs can really solve the problem that people hope they will solve. You know, you and I can have a compiler on our computers. The equivalent of a compiler would be a fabrication line. and they're millions of dollars, so you and I can't have one.
Really, a quick one. How does it happen that in 83, when you started considering the whole picture...
I can't understand a word you're saying.
Sorry,
could you please speak loud and slowly?
In 83, when you started the whole picture, how did it happen that you started with the libraries and the tools around and you considered the kernel only the second step in the 90s?
I wasn't thinking that far ahead.
So
however, it's clear that what we need now is application programs.
Okay. So the picture was not very clear from the very beginning.
I didn't think beyond developing a free operating system. What time is it? It's exactly 5.
You always insist on the word free, and you say that it's extremely important that people understand that word. But isn't it ambiguous in itself?
Yes, it is. It's much better in French. No one will think that libre means gratuit. But even in English, the reason I insist on saying free software is because at least that name is associated with a concern for freedom. And the usual alternative is most distinctly not associated with any kind of demand for freedom.
But wouldn't a word such as freedom or liberty be more...
Freedom and what?
Freedom or liberty, something...
Well, freedom software... I mean, if I had started calling it freedom software at the beginning, maybe it would have been better, I don't know. But neither of those two sounds very natural, and it would be ridiculous for us to try to change now. If you want to change the name of your activity, you have to be able to tell everybody. We would need lots of money to buy ads to tell everybody. We could never, and we don't have that money, so we can't do it.
Hello. What do you think about the company which, in one end, bring a lot of value to Linux, new Linux, and in the other end, close the access to the data as IBM or HP?
Well, I look at the two activities separately. If a company is doing several different things, I think it's best to look at each activity individually and judge it by itself. And then state these judgments separately. So don't add it all up. Say, this company is doing this thing that's good and that thing that's bad.
And you define the 4 levels of freedom.
They're not levels of freedom. They're
of freedom.
4 freedoms that we insist on in the free software movement.
Okay. And then you said that different licenses guarantee these 4 freedoms in some way or another.
Yes.
Could you comment a little bit on it and comparing different licenses, maybe?
The biggest difference between licenses is that some licenses permit non-free versions and some licenses do not permit non-free versions. If the X11 license permits non-free versions, and that means somebody could make improvements in X and publish that as non-free software. I wrote a license called the GNU General Public License, or GNU GPL for short, which does not permit non-free versions. So we call this technique copyleft. because it's based legally on copyright. But instead of using copyright to take away other people's freedom, we use copyright to defend other people's freedom. And we say, you are free to publish a modified version, but the modified version has to be free also.
How do you see Microsoft and the GNU project in 20 years?
I have no idea what things are going to look like in 20 years. In much less than 20 years, we could either triumph completely or disappear. I don't know what will happen. I think that's not a very useful question. If I could tell you what was going to happen, then you couldn't change it. If we get together and champion free software, then it may continue. If not, then those who would like to get rid of it could make it go away. I think I better bring this to a close. I'm getting too sleepy to continue.
C'est ça qu'on a marqué sur le...